Hello, I am your host, Michael Sarno, and welcome to a very special episode of Ever Present Past here on KXRW and X-Ray FM. Today, we have a real treat. I had the chance to sit down with Stuart Copeland, drummer and founding member of The Police, one of the most distinctive and expressive musicians in rock history, and an artist whose career has gone far beyond the drum kit. Of course, many know Copeland from The Police, where his unmistakable drumming and creative energy helped define one of the most influential bands of its era. But Stuart's career has always stretched across multiple worlds of music. Beyond the stage, he has composed for film, television, orchestral works, opera, and even video games, bringing the same adventurous spirit to projects ranging from Rumblefish and Wall Street to Good Burger and Spyro the Dragon. Stuart is also bringing his live show, Have I Said Too Much, to Portland on June 27th at the Aladdin Theater. It's not the typical performance you might expect from a musician whose works have stretched across rock, film, television, orchestral music, and video games. It's an evening of stories, humor, music, and the kind of behind-the-scenes perspective only Stuart Copeland could give. In this conversation, we talk about his time with The Police, the chaos and chemistry that made the band work, his transition into film scoring, and what audiences can expect when he comes to Portland. Here is my conversation with Stuart Copeland.
Whatever I say, just put lots of beeps on it.
I will.
So that I sound like a real rock star.
Well, of course. I mean, you are, Stuart. It's hard to deny that. So I guess the first question, and I got to ask this, Stuart, you are obviously one of the most expressive musicians in rock in your playing and personality. And I'm really curious. I'd love to hear it straight from Stuart Copeland. Do you think that drummers tend to be wired a little differently and have a little bit of different DNA in them? Or is that kind of like a myth that was built around the instrument with like Jim Henson putting Animal behind the drums on the Muppets or something like that?
Well, actually, scientists are still working on this issue of whether, you know, the correlation between coolness and banging stuff. And we're not quite sure about the cause and effect. Does banging stuff make you cool, or do you need to be cool to bang shit? You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both, but certainly, actually, in all seriousness, Stockholm University, Stanford University, all these different institutions have examined the relationship between cognition and rhythm. Mm. And the better you are at rhythm, there's a high correlation with high IQ. So, folks, all those drummer jokes, what do you throw a drowning guitarist?
No, it's fascinating to me. I mean, there's got to be something to it because, I mean, obviously all of the drummers throughout the years, such as yourself, like Mick Fleetwood, Keith Moon, Mitch Mitchell, all of them.
Well, three completely contrasting personalities there.
Yeah.
Mick Fleetwood, who's boss of everything. He's Mr. Left Brain Logic. Mm-hmm. Keith Moon, who's batshit crazy. And who was the third one you mentioned?
Mitch Mitchell.
Mitch Mitchell, just a timid soul who bangs like crazy. He's the best of all of them, in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. But he was just a timid little guy.
Ah, yes. Common strand can unite all of them under one umbrella, I guess. And that's the
all extremely cool.
Absolutely. So I know, obviously, and I'm sure that there's a lot of talk on this on the tour and everything. You've talked, obviously, about The Police being three very different personalities and, you know, pushing up against each other. And out of it came the beautiful music. And I was wondering if there was like a certain song or a moment that kind of comes to mind that like something was born out of the chaos that really captures all three of the different personalities that you three had that made the music.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, on one hand, there's the early stuff, which is pick any tune, and the three of us chewed on it and turned it into something kind of equally. Mm-hmm. Sting brought in, to start with, a great song for us to chew on. Now, one of the problems between Sting and I is that he regards the band as its purpose on the planet is to serve his song. But as a member of the band who just enjoys banging stuff, I think the song is there to serve the band. The song, the band gets nowhere without a good song. Let's be clear about that. Oh, yeah. But really, the song is to make the band look cool rather than the other way around. For me, the band, the musicians, the players are the thing. And the song is just gasoline for the engine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the police, especially with your percussion and drumming, that is such a huge part. That's what I was drawn to it. I think a lot of people are drawn to it because it's a band that the percussion is such a forefront thing, and it really complements it very well. So I think that there's a lot of, there's so many funny moments between you guys because in interviews or concerts, you guys are very personable and very loud, and it's great. One of the examples is I love the video of you eating the watermelon with one hand, and you're going crazy with one hand on the drums, and you're just eating a watermelon, and then Sting's like, pick it up, pick it up, and then you just shove it in your mouth, and then you
That
go
son
crazy
of
on
a
stage.
bitch, that god mother fucking goddamn don't slow down, he says. You fucking, I'm gonna come for you, god, slow down, god. You see, this is what I have to deal with. Me slowing down, he knows right where my short and curlies are.
I can imagine. I can
And
imagine.
by the way, I kind of know where his are too, so it's
Oh
even.
yeah, I mean, being together for all those years, it's like living together in like family. I'm sure, you know, it's like you get on your nerves all the time. But
Well,
you know.
here's the difference between your average family and a rock band like the Police,
Yeah.
okay? An average family isn't on stage in front of 80,000 people while a screaming match between mom and dad is going on.
Yes, that's
And
very true.
as Sting's screaming at me on stage, okay, I might have sped up a little bit. Hey, come on. And I'm thinking as he's screaming at me, and I'm, how long have you known me? And you think that's how to calm me down? But neither of us are fully in command of our emotions at such times.
No, I don't. No, I don't blame you. Trust me. If I was called out in front of a lot of people, I think I would be working through my emotions as well. It's so funny. I mean,
Well, the cool thing is, though, he can scream all he wants, but I got a big bad drum set to bang on,
That's right. That's
And
right. Yeah, no, he's a and
he could shout at me with his microphone, but I could just turn him off in my monitors.
it,
But I get the sentiment. I understand the sentiment that he wishes to express. I have to say this. I say all of these things. At my show, you're going to hear a lot of smack, but it
Yeah.
is all with love and admiration. I'm actually a big Sting fan. I've got all of his records, well, digitally, I guess, but I'm still susceptible to his melodic sensibilities, his rhythmic sensibilities. As I discovered, I never listened to a single word of his lyrics back in the day. But then when I did my Police Deranged for orchestra, I had to organize and or the vocals, and I had to look, gosh, some of those lyrics are pretty darn clever.
Yes, no, I think anybody that looks at it from a lens, especially the one that I look at it from, you got the contrastic personality. I think it's a huge respect thing, though. I think it's a very therapeutic that you guys can be open and still have a good time and bash. And you know, I think there's like an interview in the mid 80s around the Synchronicity tour that you were like, you want to see me whoop his ass? That you just go right at him. And I think that's hilarious. And I think most people do see that
Well,
it's
he asked for it. He spilled his drink on me or some kind of provocative motion. He knew what was going to happen next.
Exactly.
Well, one of the great disappointments in Andy's life is that both Sting and I lack deep reservoirs of bile. Neither of us can sustain a tantrum for longer than about 20 minutes. And while Andy's in heaven, he pulls up a deck chair and he's throwing bombs. He loves this. It makes him like the peacemaker, But then before he knows it, we're all hugging it out, and then, Andy's all deflated.
Yes, it's funny. Even in comment sections and stuff, it's really funny because a lot of the comments will be like, "Yeah, Andy's just sitting back and just watching these two go at it." So one of the trio of personalities
Well,
that it
it's
all goes
our
with.
crew, Andy, of course, and our crew, they all know what's going on, sound check. But like bands that we're touring with are, sort of waiting for their sound check and they're watching the Police going at it, in legendary fashion. They're going, geez, gosh, man, gosh. And then, what they don't realize is that we'll probably be hugging it out 20 minutes later.
Exactly.
As soon as we're not actually playing music together, we get along great.
Yes, I can imagine. I know you've said stuff
See,
about
the music is the problem.
music is the problem. Exactly. Music's the thing that unites and divides, I guess, the common thread. So it's funny how that works. I mean, looking back at the Police, obviously, hindsight bookended, not to be too existential of a thing, but I'm really curious, like looking back at it with distance, is there anything from that period, musically or personally, that you would have like changed if you were king of the world for one day, I guess?
Well, if I changed anything, it probably would have all fallen apart. So with all of its warts and scratches, it actually kind of turned out pretty well. So no, I wouldn't change anything. That time, you know, there was some soup, you know, some gratuitous insults and screaming matches there. We might have been able to do without them, but you know, who knows? Maybe they were part of the seasoning of the band sound.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at, I mean, you guys had a great evolution too. I mean, when bands evolve, you never know where it's going to go. And you guys had the 5 albums, and all along the way, everybody took value in it. So it's, I love seeing it. And I love the answer that you really wouldn't change anything, because I think it worked out great. And, you know, there's always going to be like some scratches on the surface about stuff.
Why, sure.
You are listening to a very special episode here on Ever Present Past, as we are in conversation with one of the founding members of The Police and drumming legend Stuart Copeland. We are taking a brief break to hear from our sponsors that help make programming and conversations like this possible. And we will return on the other end of this break here on Ever Present Past, KXRW, and X-Ray FM.
Have you always wanted to buy a washing machine and support affordable housing at the same time? Well, now you can at the Clark County Habitat for Humanity store. They have furniture, appliances, building materials, rugs, paint, flooring, tile, and tons of other new and gently used items. Every purchase supports home building projects right here in Clark County. You can donate your own things too. Or better yet, you can call 360-213-1313. That's 360-213-1313. And they'll come pick them up from your home. The Clark County Habitat for Humanity store is located on Southeast 2nd Street near the corner of Mill Plain and I-205. They have everything and the kitchen sink.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project pays for the reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues, in print and online, including housing, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's morrellinc.com.
Welcome back to Ever Present Past here on KXRW and X-Ray FM. I am your host, Michael Sarno. We now rejoin our conversation with Stuart Copeland, founding member and drummer of The Police, already in progress.
But one thing I'd love to know, so after The Police, you had went into the second career of composing for film for about like 20 solid years.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, like, how did that door first open for you from coming from being drumming for The Police? I mean, was scoring something that you were aiming towards, or was that something that found you? How do you go from the drummer seat into the composing and scoring of films?
I never gave it a moment's thought until I got a phone call from Francis Coppola. I took the call, and he invited me down to, just to kind of hang out and talk concept. And he, down where he was rehearsing his movie, Rumblefish, mm-hmm. and there were other musicians that he invited, and I nuked them all. That's one thing drummers are really good at, by the way. So, you know, it's one of the first talent skills that a drummer needs is how to get rid of that other guy off the drum stool, because there's only one drum set. You know, guitars you can plug into the other jack, you know. Yeah. Drums, you got to learn how to get rid of that other guy. So those poor guys down there in Tulsa never saw it coming. And I got the gig. Which is a big credit to Francis Coppola for taking a chance on somebody who'd never even thought about film composing, mm-hmm. You know, a banger of stuff. But this particular film was Rumblefish, was about The clock ticking, the time running out. He wanted a feeling of high noon, that this is this teleological, inevitable progression towards destiny. And the idea of clock ticking, well, how about get a rhythmatist? So that's how I got the job. And then 20 years of flinty-eyed professional hired gun film composing, where I learned a lot of stuff. I learned way more as a hired gun film composer than I ever would have learned in a rock band.
What was some of the stuff you learned?
Orchestration. I'm recording all the music for Rumblefish myself, all the instrument, guitar, bass, drum, mallet instruments and such, and also tape loops of sound effects and so on. But one day he turns around and says, you know what? We need some sentiment here. We need some strings. So I had to go out. I had studied music in college, so I did understand how to put notes on a page and figured bass and voice leading and everything. But I hadn't seen a sheet of music for my entire music career. So I had to go out and get some paper with 5-line staves on it, put my chords on there, and hire a string section. And working with the orcs blew my mind. The precision, it's so you just put it on the page and they play it. No exhortations, no persuasion, no anything, interact, just put it on the page and they play it. And the other thing is, it sounds so beautiful that, man, let me do this for the next 20 years. And so it was under the harsh yoke of cruel employ that I was forced to develop an entirely new skill set.
That process going from, you know, banging the drums on, you know, in the early days, the, you know, punk Outlandish Demore and everything, going into, as you were saying, just writing these things for strings, it's got to be wildly different. I mean, you've done Wall Street, two of my favorite movies of all time, Good Burger and See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Know? Those are not Academy Award candidates, but they were both hugely successful. These kind of dumb movies, dumb comedies. I was really quite partial to Good Burger myself. That was a fun movie.
Oh, I love, I mean, I'm a millennial. I grew up with that and Kenan and Kel and all that. And so that was the orange VHS. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for being such a part of my childhood there. So
what about Spyro? Did you ever play Spyro?
Oh, that I got you did like all the Spyros. So you did it from the PS1 on 97, the very first one. You did like 5 or 6 Spyros, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Four.
Okay.
The first three were the best ones. And the fourth one was pretty cool too, but a different management, different concept. And that was pretty good too. But the first three were the killer ones. And that was 3 summers of doing like a quadruple album set of backing tracks. Really great fun. But under the gun, you find out that under that pressure, actually, that's where you get to the deep vein of creativity. When you haven't got time for self-doubt or judgment or anything, you just keep moving. And then you go back and look at it and say, dang, those 3 notes go together really well. That bass line, where that come? It came from the I won't say the pressure. It came from the haste. It came from just moving forward without thought, without remorse. And you find out that without self-editing or self-doubt, that's where the really great stuff happens.
How does doing scoring work? Obviously, I mean, when you're working in a band, coming in and you got, obviously you're providing the drums and everything and you work together and you figure something out. But when it comes to scoring, like, do they provide you with like
nothing?
They
shall not speak.
Like, go for it.
No. They shall not deliver any opinion. They don't need any persuasion. They examine the page with laser focus for every scintilla that you put on the page. You know, a melody isn't just da 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 da. It's da 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 da. And so you've got to put those accents on there. You know, the articulation. You've got to tell them not just what notes to play, but how shall they play them. And so that's their ethos, is not to debate, but to reproduce exactly what's on the page, whether it's bullshit or not. They play it perfectly without debate.
Awesome.
And that's very different from working in a band where it's all negotiation. You know, how do you get a guitarist to turn the volume down? Put a sheet of music in front of him. No, in a rock band, it's all collaboration. And orchestral musicians look upon rock bands sort of making it up as they go along. My gosh, how do they play without a score? You know, it's a weird world to them. Improvisation. Oh my God. You know, I say to the orchestra, I got 16 bars here. Anyone want to take the solo?
Yeah.
Silence. No, they do not want to take a solo. So they're very, very different.
I can imagine. And of course, you had the Police Deranged for Orchestra, as you mentioned earlier. And
I played that in Portland. Had a great show with that in Portland.
Yes, if I saw that correctly, did you kick off the show in Portland? That might be completely incorrect, but I thought it was that one of your first performances?
Oh, no, that's completely incorrect.
That is completely incorrect. Yeah. I apologize on that one.
But, I can't remember, but it was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I still love, I'm changing that show by evolving. What I'm doing right now is orchestrating and deranging more tunes, some more of the film stuff that I've done, some more obscure police tunes. And that's sort of my when I get home, that's what I'm doing when I get home.
Oh, awesome. That'll be good. I know that you started the Police Deranged for Orchestra, and now you're doing Have I Said Too Much. Was there an evolution from those two?
Well, once again, they're unrelated.
Totally unrelated. You had the Have I Said Too Much started in the UK, and it looked like you sold out almost every show, right?
Yeah, I don't know why. I discovered something that I never suspected, which is that sitting in a room, lighting up a room with laughter, is really a blast. I don't need no drums to light up a room, it turns out, and it's really rewarding. I never ever dreamed that I would be any good at that. I don't need a drum set. I just need an armchair. And yes, a wild promoter in England said, how about you just go out? And he booked a couple of weeks of shows. And man, it was just too much fun.
Yeah. It's a different type of performance. I mean, I think you'd feel, well, you have great stories, I'm sure. Video, obviously. Knowing your history and music and the Police history and music, what do you think creates such a demand for an evening like this in a format the way it is?
I don't know. It's sort of like the Police band always surprises us. You know, when we did the reunion tour, we never expected, we thought we were going to be playing big theaters, maybe. Mm-hmm. We never expected to be doing multiple evening stadium shows, you know, around the world. And the Police has always surprised us that way. We released our deluxe version of Synchronicity, and it just went, it exploded. Mm-hmm. When I did my little Super 8 movie, not only did Sundance accept the movie, my homemade out of focus Super 8 film, the response has always surprised us. And so the talk tour, I guess, is just more of that. I mean, I guess maybe, you know, managing one's expectations is probably a good philosophy, so you can always be pleasantly surprised.
Of course.
Here's an interesting factor that I discovered is that, my wife says to me after one of the first ones, how can you do that? Just walk in front of all people and just like, talk like that in turn. By the way, there's a host who asks questions for like 2 hour show. She might ask 5 questions and then I go off. And the answer is that talking to a crowd is easier than talking to a person at a dinner party or a cocktail party or any kind of social interaction takes navigation skills. You need to listen. That's for me, that's right there. That's tough. You need to find your moment to politely contribute to the, it takes a lot more navigation when you got a big mic and they're all just sitting there. That's a lot actually easier. And you can kind of get into the flow of your anecdote or your story or whatever it is without having to listen to someone else's flow or anecdote.
It's funny how that works. And I mean, personally, I think you'd be built fantastically for this because I think you'd go out and I'm sure no shortage conversation or things to say into the microphone.
The weird thing is that it's supposed to be 2 45-minute sets with an intermission in the middle. If I get on stage, off stage in under an hour, that's like a miracle. And I keep cutting material so that I can bring it in, you know, but it just kind of grows back. You know, you cut off my whole polo adventures playing against King Charles, you know, when he was Prince Charles. That's 20 minutes there. I cut that out and then just somehow other stories fill its place, unbidden. But the other weird thing is that after, you know, sitting there for 2 hours of me bullshitting, at the end of the show, they're all, it's like a standing ovation. They still want more. And by the way, there is plenty more. I mean, I do get to a lot of the great adventures, but there's a lot of great adventures that I don't get to because you can't keep them there all night.
Yes. Yeah. There's curfews.
Yeah. Unions.
Yeah. Unions. Yes. Yeah. They're always watching. So
the union guys come and drag me off the stage. Shut up. Enough.
Oh, man. It's
nobody's leaving.
Nobody's leaving. I think people, for whatever it's worth, love to know always any band what goes on behind the scenes. I think they feel more connected to the music and the people for it. I love that stuff. That's a very biased opinion, but just knowing the stories that you get to tell, that starts to open the door for them. So I think it's a great format. And it's specifically when. For the last question here, just if people come to the Aladdin Theater on June 27th, you know, what kind of evening should they expect? You said, I know you started saying 2:45 halves. Is there anything that you'd like to say about what people might be able to expect seeing what the Aladdin Theater will hold on June 27th?
Well, let's see. If you're bringing kids, bring earmuffs because there might be some salty language. I don't know. Bring a rain crowd. It might get weird.
I love it. I can't thank you enough for the time. It's always a blast talking with you and hearing what you have to say. I love your personality and your percussion, man. It is a thrill to be talking with you. So thank you, Stuart.
Aw, shucks. Thanks for listening.
That was Stuart Copeland, founding member and drummer of The Police, joining us here on Ever Present Past. A huge thank you to Stuart for taking the time to talk with us about his life in music, his years with The Police, his work composing for film and video games, and his current live show, Have I Said Too Much? Stuart Copeland will be bringing that show to Portland on June 27th at the Aladdin Theater. As you heard, it is not the typical performance you might expect. It is an evening of stories, humor, music, and the kind of behind-the-scenes perspective only he can give. We'll leave and transition you now into a short excerpt of King of Pain from Stuart Copeland's Police Deranged for Orchestra. For Ever Present Past, I'm Michael Sarno. You've been listening on KXRW and X-Ray FM. Thanks so much for joining us.